Welcome back to the League Scene's look at multicultural round of the NRL season, otherwise known as round three. I'm AJ Lucantonio, the man with the stats and with League Unlimited. Joining me, as always, the man with the news and fellow LU alumni himself, Reece Sullivan. G'day, mate. How are you?
Good, AJ. How are you?
It's been a big week. A lot of things happening, a lot of things going on, but you know, we're here talking footy on a Sunday night. It's a bit like tradition, mate, and I'm starting to get used to it.
Well, you'll have to step out of it because we're having to push it back to a Monday next week.
Yeah, we do have to push it back to Monday with Easter Monday. So we're going back to the 2022 days of our recording. So we're just enjoying a bit of history here on the League Scene as well. So this week, we're going to go through all eight games, the sixth round of the Challenge Cup from England, and then round three of the New South Wales Cup and Queensland Cup. There's a couple interesting little tidbits to go through, especially with what's happened in the NRL level this week as well. But before we go any further, another big shout out to the guys at the Rugby League Project for creating the awesome interactive Scorigami chart. I've just been observing the projects that they've been doing, and it is honestly a game changer for Scorigami because every time we put in a game, it gets updated like that. And it's color-coded everything, so I think it is close to one of the best tools we have in our rugby league history base. So I just wanted to give a quick shout-out to the guys there.
Yep. As always, those guys at RLP are top of the game when it comes to this sort of stuff.
Absolutely, mate. I just wanted to give them a quick shout-out off the top. So let's get through this week, starting, of course, with the grand final rematch, 34 points to 12. Penrith proving too strong for the Brisbane Broncos in this one. A bit of controversy at the top. Reece Walsh taken out of the game in the fourth minute because Taylan May didn't have a duty to bend. Katoni Staggs looking over the penalty goal for 2-0. I want to get your thoughts on this one, mate. What do you think of it?
It's a weird one because there's definitely no intention of for Taylan May to hit him high. But at the same time, there is the intention for Taylan to hit him hard. And as a result of that, it's led to a dangerous tackle.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it definitely should have gone or been charged by the MRC. I don't know whether it had been graded as careless or reckless. But, you know, he left the ground. At that point, if you make contact with the player's head, it's on you. There's no mitigating factors.
Yeah, and of course, Taylan was put on report, not charged, if I'm not mistaken, by the match review committee. Very, very happy about that one is Taylan and the Panthers. But from there, the Panthers just seemed to get in sync and they were able to take apart quite convincingly your left edge defensively, just like they did to Parramatta 6 days before that. Taruva went over. Isaac Tungo had a first half field day crossing. Did he get a double in that first half? Yes, he did. I think Mitch Kenny also ducked over from dummy half. That one a bit controversial. I don't know what edict has gone out over summer about double movements, but I am very, 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 very fucking confused.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it's weird because technically Mitch Kenny, the ball never left his chest, which means like, oh yeah, it's not a double movement, but he changed where the point of the ball was landing. Which to me, that is a textbook double movement.
There was a clear promotion as such.
Yeah, exactly.
And I agree, it's been a thing. And then someone had sports ears and tried to say what Jared Sutton said, and I honestly cringed at that revelation, to be honest with you. But you got to halftime down 22-2. Richie Benno would be very proud of that one. And then you concede two quick ones afterwards. And after, with half an hour to go, you were down 34-2. And normally when games get like that, you can tend to sort of get into blowout territory. But what I really liked about Brisbane in this game is that you kept in the fight regardless. You had every reason to concede 40, 50, maybe higher. But you stayed in the fight and they didn't score another point in that half an hour after To'o's second try. And I think that's pretty admirable, given the scenario that you're faced with both before the game and then during the game, obviously with Walsh going off injured.
Yeah, 100%. I think it showed you know, the resilience of this team. I think the as a whole, the team has really steeled because of the grand final experience. And as a result of that, I think they're a much more determined team. And they would have known the connotations of getting of conceding 50 points in a game.
Scott and Bailey would have been ready to go.
Exactly. But they were determined not to let that happen. And ultimately, Penrith have put 50 on much better teams with much less effort than they did against us.
Look, in 2021 with South Sydney.
Exactly.
They almost did it to us as well.
Yep. So, you know, it is a tough loss, and obviously losing Reece Walsh for the next month at least does hurt. But I'm proud of how they played, and I know that fully healthy would have been a much different game. We've just got to take these injuries on the chin now and just keep with the
I 100% yeah. agree, mate. Yeah. It just cut out for a second.
Hold on. Give me 5 seconds.
Oh, good. I'll just continue rambling on while you're on the move. Some lovely little play there. I thought Dean Mariner crossed for a very, very lovely try. He never stopped trying all night. And then you had the forward pass that Ezra Mann threw down the blind side. That sent Piakura away. And then Jesse Arthurs, he stood up Dylan Edwards in ways I never expected coming into this one. So some really good signs there from Jesse. And you had a couple more opportunities in the latter part of the second half. Some things just didn't pay off. You had big Xavier Willison charge through on that line break, and he flipped it back inside to Ricky, and it just didn't work out, didn't it?
Yeah, 100%. You know, it was good to see us chancing our arm. It was something I was worried we wouldn't do with no Reynolds. But you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But,
yeah,
you know, a lot of the times in this game it didn't, but that's okay.
We even got 9 minutes of Dane Laurie time in this game, which is very, very lovely. But to finish off, Piakura passed his HIA, which is good. We'll get him for the Cowboys game. Walshy's 4 to 6 weeks, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, correct.
So that will be around 10 return. Oh, let me have a look who that's against. Ah, the Roosters. Terrific. I think Payne Haas is due that about around that. So,
yes, he's due around the same time, yep.
Fucking hell. Okay. Just a shame Spencer Lenu won't be there for the occasion.
Oh, well, he did to himself.
Exactly. He did do that to himself. He did do that to himself, the stupid idiot. But let's start talking some players. I was having an absolute field day laughing at Fletcher Baker. But I think I might have been a little bit harsh. I thought numbers-wise, he ran for over 100 metres, had just under 50 post-contact metres, an offload, 29 made tackles, 4 misses. But some of those misses, and I think he had a couple of errors as well. Like that miss on Cleary on that line break, that's alarm bells. And then Brian Toto sat him down. I thought that was a bit embarrassing.
Yeah, it wasn't his best game, but at the same time, I think a lot of people were taking what he did and they were comparing it to what Payne Haas would have done. To me, he's not going to replace Payne Haas. I agree that he did have a bit of a poor game, but I don't think it's the end of the world, to be honest.
I mean, I had way too much fun. I had way too much fun.
Yeah, of course he did.
With my agenda and then with what happened on Friday night with a certain bench forward. But we'll get to that in a moment. Carrigan, I thought, was outstanding in the middle. I thought he did some really good things. He always kept finding a way forward. Xavier Willison, under trying circumstances, I thought was great. Heverington, I thought, gave a little bit of a point of difference as far as impact. But I think we might have to draw the curtains on Martin Tapa'u's time in a Broncos jumper. Another knee raise?
I don't see, you know, first of all, Willison is better than him. I think we established that on Thursday.
Yep.
Second of all, you know, why are we keeping him when we got Jaden Hunt?
Yep. So. We'll go through his numbers in the lower grade report because I think he played for Wynnum today, if I'm not mistaken. True. So we'll have a look at that a little bit later on. But for Penrith, Isaac Tungo is probably having the dream run a first grade player can have, given like all the scenarios at play with who he's gone up against. Like, he's had 8 line breaks in 2 weeks. He's been absolutely damaging running the football. And Edwards, I think, just over 250 metres. Edwards over 300. That is absolutely insane. Scott Sorensen, a bit of a quiet one. There's a bit of concern for a potential MCL injury.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So that's a bit of alarm. But knowing what's going to happen, he'll be fit to play and the Roosters will turn him into prime Bradley Clyde, like usual.
Yes, of course.
But I do want to give some raps to a couple of their younger forwards. Fisher Harris out, I thought, would have levened up the level as far as the forwards. But I'm really impressed with what I'm seeing from Lindsay Smith and also Liam Henry playing a bit more minutes as well.
Yeah, true. But at the same time, you have to remember Penny Harsout is another blow for the Broncos in terms of that.
Yeah, I'm not disputing that at all because we're all looking forward to Fisher, Harris and Haas going head-to-head. Not disputing that whatsoever. And I thought from what we saw in the sample size, it'd be interesting to see how Liam Henry goes next week against the Roosters forward pack with their bench impact will be a little bit more full strength. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But anything else that we missed on this game? Oh, also Cleary, outstanding.
100%.
Free line break assists, free try assists.
He just put that game away when he had to. Didn't try to overexert himself, just played the perfect hand and got the result.
Now I say, are we ready to move on?
We can move on now, yes.
Yes, we can move on. For Reece's sanity, we're moving on.
Yes, correct.
Moving on, Waz 18, Raiders 10 on the land of Christchurch. And also, it is very lovely to go to a game in New Zealand, not at Mount Smart Stadium, without a pitch invader.
Typical New Zealand, always turning up.
This time it didn't happen. That's why I'm saying I'm shocked.
Unbelievable. But again, the whole Christchurch experience was disappointing. I mean, they didn't ask Ricky Stewart questions about the controversial calls. Like, you'd think that would be one of the first thing the media would ask, but the Christchurch media is lacking.
Yeah. I mean, Tiffany Salmon wasn't sidelined. And I'm pretty sure Jake Duke might have been around. Who knows?
Probably.
But let's start talking about the game. It's a little bit of an interesting one to start with. I thought both sides really just in a bit of a scrap, in a bit of a fight. But then Jackson Ford broke through for that line break. Rapana with the high tackle. And then Sean Johnson put Adam Fadul Blake through a gap bigger than Sydney Heads for that opening try. There was some poor edge defence on that left for Canberra. Hopewadi lacking again at centre.
Yep, exactly. Just really poor read, all things considered. And, yeah, Warriors took advantage of it early. Got that nice lead. And the Raiders, they didn't die wondering again.
No, they didn't. And you had, I think, they shifted out to this right-hand side. Matt Timoko looking so dangerous with the footy in handy.
You forgot the try-saver by Savage.
Savage try-saver on Fadul Blake. My God. When you see Fadul Blake running and you saw Xavier Savage running, what did you think was going to happen?
I thought Fadul Blake was just going to put a big arm into his chest and that'd be the end of it.
But?
Nope, that's not what happened.
What about the upper body strength on Savage, eh? Like, I didn't see that in Xavier before that.
It's ridiculous.
Good on him. Was the Ethan Strange one before the Timoko try as well? The no try for Strange? Yes, it was. 29-10.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was a bit touch and go. I've seen worse given. That's for sure. But given they went up no try and the angles were very touch and go, that definitely was a hometown call, that one.
Yes, it was a interesting one because who is the referee?
Kennedy. Liam Kennedy.
Yeah. He seemed very adamant that it was a no try.
He was in the best position on the field.
But seemed like the replays, really, it was a lot more 50-50 than he made it seem.
Yeah, 100%. And I was a really touchy guy. But Canberra didn't die wondering. Despite that, they forced an error from Lussick. They worked it out to the right-hand side. Matt Timocol stood up, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. That was a really nice play from Matt Timocol. He's just continuing to get better and better, this young Kiwi centre.
Yes, he is. And it's scary to watch his development over the last couple of seasons. Because really, this is what we were expecting Seb Chris to be. He's absolutely outshone Seb Chris at the moment over the last couple, since midway through last season.
Yeah, I think sort of like you had the 2022 final series where Matt Timocol had that really big play. He had that massive stiff arm on Cam Munster in the final series. And you had him and Chris that were in the train-on squad. Chris went into that World Cup ahead of Timocol, which at the time we were a little bit sus about because we weren't too sure. Then over the off-season, Ricky then moves Seb Chris to fullback. Timocol keeps his development at centre. And arguably, that has made Timocol a much better player, a more dynamic player in and around what Canberra are after, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And especially with Jack Whiten leaving, that type of centre is what they needed. And I think he has really just taken this Raiders attack to a level that we might not have seen coming. But yeah, I feel like his stats in this one: 135 meters on only 11 carries, 3 tackle breaks, a line break, 2 line break assists, an offload, a try assist, and a try.
What do you want to see from him?
That's just ridiculous stat sheet stuffing.
Yeah. Second half, Tane Tuipiki went off for a failed HIA. That shift saw the return of the prodigal son at fullback in Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. It was good signs to see Roger the Dodge back in the number one, wasn't it? Brought a tear to my eye.
Yeah, it was, and it looked natural for him. I mean, he finished up with 22 carries, 200 metres, 5 tackle breaks, line break, and picking up that try as well. So I know why the Warriors have been playing here at centre, even with Nicole Klukstad out, but it feels like to me, especially when you consider that they were 0-2 heading into this match, might have been the wrong decision.
Yeah, 100%. But from there, the Raiders are able to work the ball to the right-hand side. Timocol again combined with Nick Chotrich, and Chotrich went over for a 10-6 lead. But then Dallin Watini-Zelezniak started scheming across the field, and Luke Metcalf charged onto the ball at some rate of knots, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He was... it was a really brilliant play from him. Just the heads-up awareness of what Dallin was trying to do and just the little connection between those two. It's usually we see Metcalf connecting with Dallin, not the other way around. But it was good.
One of the Raiders was so far up in defense on that play. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was Hosking. He was just so far up. I created that massive gap. And then from there, we started to see why Nick Kotrick is slowly becoming a meme. Put the ball down off the kick and then Roger the Dodge. I've got a throwback to 2015, man. I've got a massive throwback.
That was a special try. That one?
Yeah.
Yeah, just game on the line. There aren't too many better players you want with the ball in their hands, that's for sure.
Yeah. Then we had a spate of captain's challenges that were successful. We had 3 successful challenges on the trot, Liam Kennedy. 3 of them.
That's going to mess up his rankings at the end of the season.
I will say, though, that second one was absolute bullshit off the shore dropout. That was absolutely pathetic.
True.
Like, how can he say Harris Tavita jumps early when he wins the freaking ball? He's won the contest for the ball by jumping up on time to catch it. That's not going early. If anyone's gone early, it's Rapana. I'm confused, mate.
I get it.
Graham Anderson is going to have a field day tomorrow after what we saw this afternoon, within reason. But, my God. And then we just had an error fest to finish the game. We had 5 errors in the last 5 minutes. My God.
And 2 of them were with the Raiders on the attack.
Yeah, they were coming at them late. But for all the raps we've given Ethan Strange to start off with, he was very targeted defensively. He did okay. He missed 9 tackles, though. Is that a bit of a worry?
Look, if you're expecting your young 5'8 to be a defensive brick wall, 9 times out of 10, you're going to be met with very bad news.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be too concerned. I wouldn't be reading into that too much.
That's fair. Just because he was mainly picked on his defense when you had him and Kaio Weeks. He lined up so well opposite. I think it might have been Helam Lukey in the last trial game.
Yeah, but imagine how many tackles Weeks would have missed in that situation.
Yeah, I think Weeks would have been worse. I'm just saying that. But again, I thought Strange running the football. There was a rush of blood play as well off one of the scrums, off one of those areas where they kicked. I think it was off the Roger one. They kicked on the first play from the scrum. And it was just like, what are you doing, mate? It was Savage, Strange.
It was Savage, but still on Strange, just in terms of the running. He'll get more mature, you know, as the year goes on. And settle a bit more.
Very impressed with Tarpane in the middle. Gula was pretty good as well. I thought their back 5 worked hard out of yardage all night. But for the Warriors, Rog deserves all the kudos. Fadua, Blake, Barnett, and Ford. I've seen a lot of Warriors supporters wanting Jacob Laban in this side over a guy here. They reckon Jackson Ford will be overtaken by Laban towards the end of the season, but Ford's not dying wondering, isn't he?
Definitely not. He's not going to go down without a fight, that's for sure. He's playing some of the best footy of his career at the moment, I would say.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Anyone else on the Waj you want to give a wrap to quickly?
No, I think we're pretty much good to go.
Alrighty, so let's move on to the Roosters 48-6 win over the South Sydney Rabbitohs. Now, first and foremost, we were very, very good, and Souths, to my joy, were very, very shit. Now we've got that out of the way. I was very impressed with Sandon Smith. I'm just going to say that nice and early. I thought his control, his demeanour, coming into the side, he didn't look out of place. I'm very, very happy with what I saw from him and Walker in the half. So, say, for example, touch wood, it doesn't happen. But if anything does go wrong with Luke Keary in the next couple of weeks, and he does have to retire, or there's another relapse in his health, Sandon and Sam moving forward, I didn't have no qualms with.
Yeah, I think that's the advantage when you have a guy who has experience in the number 14 jersey for that team. I think because it's not so much of a learning curve of them coming into the side, having to learn how everyone plays. They're already used to it. They're just having to adapt their game, which is the easier part.
Yeah. And obviously, JWH is 300. I was very critical last week, because I didn't see the hunger and the attitude from the beginning. But that was really turned around very, very early. Collins was outstanding before he went off with his hammy. Radley through the middle. This bloke has just done a complete rebound. He must have been listening to the league scene where I was going off at rates and knots last year about him. But I was very pleased with him. Dom Young on the flank. My God.
Yeah, see, he was good. He was very good.
I'm very, very happy he's chosen the high life of Bondi. And then, obviously, James Tedesco. There's a career renaissance with Teddy that needs to be studied.
Yes. He has been almost back in his best form, I'd say, through his first 3 games.
Yeah, 100% agree, mate.
Although, look, you can glaze the Roosters for hours and you definitely do that if you could.
There's
be given
one.
The
there's two more players. Can I do two?
Okay.
Two more quickly.
Okay, you got two more. You got two more.
Connor Watson off the bench. Perfect. What we need him to do. I would like to see him play as a natural middle, though. I think that's where his asset is. And then also, we can't do a Roosters recap without mentioning my boy, Nafa'ahu White's try assist.
Okay.
To see who he beat off that first one, he beat Jack Whiten. All ends up. Okay, but let's talk about the elephant in the room here.
He has the size advantage over him, so...
Let's talk the elephant in the room and how shit South Sydney were.
Well, let's first of all start with what was happening off the field.
Yeah.
Before the game started. So, the decision to drop Lachlan Ilias. We won't go too deep into it, but we touched on it last week with what we both agreed. Even though it seems like the obvious decision, it's not a decision that's going to change South Sydney as a whole. Like, Ilias just doesn't have enough sway in that team to be the reason why they're losing these games.
Huh?
What?
I said, uh-huh.
Yep, okay. It sounded like you just said, huh. Like you were just confused.
No.
Yeah, and I'd say we were 100% correct in that, because Dean Hawkins, everything considered, didn't have a bad game, and South Sydney still lost by 42 points. The second thing was the decision to switch Damien Cook for Salio Havili. That's wrong, probably on, I'd say, three levels. Number one, Damien Cook is still the best hooker in South Sydney. Number two, Salio Havili's best position is bench prop, not starting hooker.
Yeah.
Number three, if you do drop Cook, the only person that should be playing Cooker is Mavazelos.
Correct.
So, to me, I get the sense that both of those decisions were massive panic calls by Jason Demetrio.
Can I throw one more panic call in?
Yeah, sure.
Taking your best, one of your second best impact forward from last week, Darvin Mawali. Free run, 17 metres in 22 minutes of football is absolutely criminal behaviour. Absolutely criminal. If you want to go aggressive early, start Tom Burgess in a derby game. He's got experience. He could get under the Roosters' skin. I was very, very shocked when that happened.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you on that too.
And also, Kepi's garbage.
Yes. Oh, yes, he is. Good lord.
But anyway, a lot of criticism has come of Troll's way. I don't necessarily agree with it. Yes, I am somewhat defending Latrell Mitchell. The world is not coming to an end. But everything that's gone on this week has been an absolute disaster for South Sydney. Obviously, the stuff with his rant post-game, that was handled poorly by everyone. There was even an attempt to blame the Roosters for it leaking.
Ah.
I don't know, but people were saying that the Roosters tried to stir up fake outrage. That's what South Sydney officials believed, apparently.
Okay.
Okay. But I do think some of the criticism has been over the top. There's no doubt he had a poor game the other night. But at the same time, there's 16 other players there that didn't lift as well. And I know he's the focal point in the attack, but South Sydney had a couple of chances inside the opposition 20. He didn't get the ball at all. You want the ball in your best player's hands, don't you?
100%. This is what I'm saying with the fact that South Sydney is such an autonomous team around Cody Walker, Jack White, and Latrell Mitchell. There's no cohesion between those three. Like, it's not like a situation where Penrith had Nathan Cleary, Jerome Luai, and Stephen Crichton. And even though those are three great players, they're all playing within the same system. They're all playing with each other. It feels like Walker, Mitchell, Whiten are all playing by themselves, isolated little bubbles. And if they interact, you know, it's good, but they don't have to.
Yeah. And I feel sorry for Cam Murray as well. He tries his absolute ass off every single week, and he is getting destroyed because no one else is going to help him lift himself up off the canvas. Kalon Matangi, he was great as well. I thought he really did try. Whiten, he had a go. He had a crack. You could respect that, but there were signs there that they gave up in the second half.
100%.
They were so bad. And then to sit there and see Jason Demetriou post-game saying he's the guy to turn it around when you concede 5 tries in the last 20 minutes, the effort plays were down disastrously, the Roosters had their best front rower off the field injured, I'd be embarrassed to walk into that video room on Monday and try and decipher what went wrong. Like,
just doubling back to something you said earlier, people who blame it on Luttrell, I'm just going to put it out there that if the Rabbitohs were to turn around tomorrow and tell Luttrell Mitchell that he's no longer required at the club, they'd be 16 out of 16 NRL sides that'd be offering him a contract.
Maybe 15 out of 16. The Roosters won't have him back.
You need a centre.
For 2024,
Yeah.
That's why we're talking to Jorgensen.
We still need a second centre.
Very true. I don't know what we'll do there, but I want to back in the, some of the guys we've got coming through, but who knows if they can stay healthy. Looking at Billy, you, Billy Smith.
Billy Smith's time.
Billy Smith Island. It's a very hard place at the moment, especially when he gets injured in New South Wales Cup again. But I'm very happy with the Roosters. Tough test against Penrith. Made a little easier with Sam Walker passing concussion protocol. Of course, downgraded from Cat 1 to Cat 2. But I'm very happy with the boys this week, but I want to see that same effort, that same attitude next week against Penrith. It's going to be hard. They're the best team in the competition, but I want to see the same start and the same rejuvenated effort the whole way through.
Yeah, 100%.
And for South Sydney, you're playing a Canterbury side that was just made to look good by a team that's somehow worse than both of them. But I think it's South Sydney at the moment, just as a general league observer, not me trying to bag them because I'm a Roosters supporter, I am waving every panic flag on the planet. Something stinks at that club.
I agree. I think there's issues. And if you think the Rabbitohs aren't on the phone to Wayne Bennett right now to try and see if he can come in and solve their mess next year, you're poorly mistaken. I think
the culture surrounding this football team, you know, the culture is actually damn good.
Yeah, pretty much. Jason Demetriou, his goose is practically cooked.
There's no way I was going through that game without mentioning that.
Yes, I was expecting it. So,
anything else we've missed on this game, or we're good to go to Belmore?
I think we're good to go over to Belmore.
We're good to go over to Belmore. It's not where the clips are going to stop, though, because Canterbury defeated the Titans 32-0 in 2024's first tank bowl. Let's go over the ground rules of what a tank bowl is. Once again, you are trying to be as shit as possible and get the wooden spoon.
Well, if that's the case, then the Titans 100% achieved it.
Oh, the Titans and the Tigers, I'm not ready for that game. When do those two go head-to-head? I am not ready for that game. Titans against the Tigers. We have to wait until... Oh, they're even playing it at Leichhardt. How ironic. How ironic that the fans have to see that potentially the last ever game at Leichhardt as a tank bowl. But back onto this one. The Bulldogs were made to look very, very good in this game. Despite a bit of a shaky start, Preston got done for an obstruction. And then also the worst bombed try in season 2024 so far.
That was horrific. First of all, I don't know what AJ Brimson was doing passing it. Second of all, I don't know how Kieran Foran dropped it.
He's just doing a charity act.
In the first minute of the game?
Better get out of the way early. But at the same time, mate, like that was their only realistic chance of scoring in the whole game.
Yeah. Correct.
And they were just I watched the replay this morning. Just to make sure that I was on the right track with everything. And Preston went over off a really, really soft defensive thing. Tana Boyd, I don't know with Tana anymore. Like, with all due respect, we played the waiting game last year with Foran. He had a chance to be a really dominant half in the first week against the Dragons. Bombed drastically. Now with Kieran Foran, bombed again drastically. How long do you give him before Tom Weaver becomes the permanent Haas partner?
Just, it's weird because there's no denying that he has the talent to be an NRL halfback. He just has never shown it at the NRL level. Like, you think back of all his games so far. Have you ever seen a game where you've watched Tyler Boyd and said, yeah, this guy's a slated NRL left halfback?
Well, he's played 62 NRL games.
Exactly.
And look, there's been a couple of games where he's shown glimpses that I think he's been most successful where he has come off the bench. You look back to finish 2022, I thought he had a couple of really great games. Like, I thought he was really good to finish 2022. And I was looking for a little bit of progression this year, but we never really respectfully saw it. And he ended up not finishing the year. He was benched for the last three games of the season for Tom Weaver because he and Foran were out. Foran, I think, was injury, but Boyd didn't finish the season.
Correct. And, you know, this guy's not a rookie anymore. We can't keep making the same excuses for him. It's becoming increasingly clear that he's just not cut out for this level, and that's not a shameful thing. A lot of halfbacks aren't. But the Titans need to decide when they're going to cut their losses. And if they're going to save this season, I'm afraid they're probably going to have to do it sooner rather than later.
The season's gone, mate. Like, Tino's out for the year with an ACL injury. Like, that's it. Like, what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks? They get Jaden Campbell and Fifita back. That's it. But any chance they had of making it far is gone.
Look, like, I'll be completely honest. If the Titans can find a way to win, or to lose, rather, less than 20 games this season, I'll call that an absolute success for them.
What, because of Tino's injury?
Yeah, just based on what we've seen these first two games for them, plus Tino's injury.
I think if that's the case, it's an absolute cop-out, personally.
But at the same time, what I want to know what the club's expectation was heading into the season. You know, you've hired Des Hasler. You've made the decision to move on from Mal Meninga. You've signed Tino and Fifita to these long-term contract extensions, made them the centerpiece of your club. Did the Titans expect that they'd have another struggle this season? Did they expect that this first 3 weeks would happen? Or were they turning around and saying, right, this is the season where we push for finals? This is the season where we set up our team to become premiership contender?
I think they're too good of a side going heading into the season. I think they're way too good of a side to be in that bottom half of the ladder again. Oh, there's no doubt they're going to be between that sort of 8 to 12 range. I think, where did we have them? I'm going to go back to our season preview doc.
I'm pretty sure I had them at about 11.
I'll have a look quickly, but I'm just really disappointed in what I'm seeing from the Titans. I'm just going to have a look at the doc. Dun, 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 dun. I had the Titans in 13th. You had them 11th. Oh, sorry. You had the Titans in 10th. Sean had them in 11th.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So,
I'm at a loss with them at the moment, to be honest.
It's so weird. They have. I know no Jane Campbell, no David Feeney definitely hurts, but they still have plenty of talent across the board. Like, they were heading into this game, they still had Brimson, they still had Phil Sami, they still had Kieran Foran in the halves, they still had the forward pack of Tino, Moe, Bo Fermor, you know. That's a damn good side, and they got absolutely blown out by a team that should... Well, they scored 12 points across their first two games. Or, sorry, 14 points across their first two games. And now they're going to score 32 points in round three.
Yeah, Michael, when they were on the roll and they were getting up to the 32 range, they were talking about potentially hitting 40 for the first time since 2015, and I couldn't believe it when I was coming home on the radio having a listen to it. And then they scored 4 second-half tries. They had 2 taken off the board for obstruction. But I think Canterbury at the moment, there's a lot of things that have gone right. Look at Connor Tracy, 233 metres. Kiraz is looking more dominant as a centre again. I've predicted that at the start of the year because I think the way they finished last year with the way Blake Wilson was playing, they had to get him in this side somehow.
Yes.
And to move Kiraz there is absolutely genius. But then the question becomes, when Josh Adakar comes back, what do you do? Do you drop Blake Taff out of the side? Do you move Tracy to fullback? Like, it's going to become an interesting little pendulum swinger.
It is weird. I think, from what I've seen, I would say Connor Tracy deserves a fullback. I don't think Blake Taff has been particularly bad. I think Tracy's done enough to accommodate his position in the squad.
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah, like you said, Carrazza's centre has been really the best possible outcome for the Bulldogs. I think he was one of their best in the losing sides in round one, round two. And then he was one of their best on ground again in this win in round three.
Yeah, 100%. And I thought guys like Curran off the bench, he was huge. I'm loving what I'm seeing from Curtis Moran. I said it last year as well. I've been really impressed with him. Liam Knight up front with the injection of whatever in his hair. Danica, we told you last week to get him to get it changed, love. You want this relationship to work.
I can't imagine, you know, going to bed with that thing. And every time you look up, you know, you're just thinking of Guy Fieri.
I love that one. I really love that one. I was thinking more Billy Idol. Sorry, Billy Joel.
And no leather jacket.
But yeah, no leather jacket. But my God, you're 100% right. I can't get that out of my head now. But Kikiao is getting better in a Canterbury jumper. I was really impressed with what I saw from Big Billy. I just hope he stays fit. And also Max King in game 100 was pretty sound. But for the Dogs, got to think they're good chances against South Sydney next week, mate.
Yes, it'll be a test to see, first of all, which side sucks more. But more importantly, exactly where the Dogs are. Because I think, you know, obviously the Sharks and the Eels aren't exactly teams you'd consider them to beat. But I do feel like they underperformed in those two games and then overperformed this when he gets the Titans.
Yeah.
We haven't really seen what the baseline is for the Dogs.
Yeah, 100%. But before we move on to the next game, between Khaleesi Haas and Keenan Palacio, we're going to play a quick game. Who had more running meters, Keenan or Khaleesi?
I'm going to go Keenan, I reckon.
58-49 decision win to Palacio.
Oh, my.
Now, for post-contact meters, who do you reckon's the winner?
Ooh, that's definitely Khaleesi.
Khaleesi wins 30-24.
Yeah.
Defensively is the only reason why he's staying in this squad, I'm telling you.
Because
defensively, the blokes actually sound. But he just can't run the fucking footy.
What's the point of having a defensively skilled back thrower if your team still leaks 32 points, though?
Fair shout. And also, I feel bad for Sam Berrills. Bloke makes 43 tackles, works his ass off to have the rest of the team falter around him.
But to be fair, he also didn't help with the amount of times he was trying to force the ball to Tanner Boyd in that second half.
Yeah, I think... I don't know what they do with Tanner, eh? Like, do they have to set him back deeper? Because he takes as long as friggin' Subo Dan does to run a marathon.
The problem is, that's evil, mate, jeez. The problem is, he just doesn't have the skills to play that deep line halfback role. He needs to be up towards the line. But when he's up in the line, he just doesn't have the decision-making time that you need at the NRL level.
Yeah, 100% right. I also feel sorry for Dan. He has to watch Billy Burns play football.
We'll get to that in a sec.
But anyway, moving on. Cowboys 46, Dragons 24. Now, the Dragons started this game like a friggin' house on fire, let me tell you. After leaking an early try to Murray Taulagi, they put together three tries in 9 minutes, including Flanagan's try. I don't know if you saw Flanagan's try, but he ran straight through Cotter and Taumalolo.
Yeah, now you see him, now you don't.
Like, it was outstanding. And 18-4, you're saying happy days. You get a penalty. Ben Hunt puts in a clever grubber. And then Raymond Faitoa Mariner puts it down. And all of a sudden, that's the turning point for the whole game.
He just never recovered.
No, you had Sam McIntyre charge over from soft range. Then
Griffin Neames did the same thing.
No, Griffin Neames is off a grubber kick from Robson.
Oh, yes. Who did the same thing. There was another barge over, wasn't there?
There was in the second half of Finafuiaki, but we'll get to that in a moment. But Tyrell Sloan not grounding that football, that's a cardinal sin for a fullback, isn't it?
That's awful. That was horrific.
You had the good with Tyrell Sloan in the first 20, and then you had the last hour.
To the point where Lomax was playing fullback at the end.
Yeah, and then you had the kick go up from Townsend. Kyle Felt did this miraculous bat back to Drinky, and it was 22-18. And then, again, they had this habit of always bombing a try and then going down the other end and conceding it. Like, Flano made the line break. He kicked early. They forced a dropout because he couldn't see Sloan on his outside. They went short. They lost it. And then Drinkwater goes for the 40-20. Finafuiaki scores.
Exactly. And I think, you know, I feel really sorry for Ben Hunt. And I know a lot of people have been questioning his captaincy after the holy hand grenade he threw with those Zach Lomax comments during the week.
The holy hand grenade of Antioch.
But I think he basically turned around and said in the post-game press conference that everything he was saying to the team after the Cowboys scored just didn't matter because they just dropped their heads. Yes. Unfortunately, at the Dragons, there's a losing culture. And you turned around and spoke about the Broncos in their clash with the Panthers.
Yeah.
Now, as the scoreboard was ticking over, the Broncos were just continuing to fight and refusing to die. And at the Dragons, it's almost like that's the opposite. They see the scoreboard start to go in the direction of the opponents, and they're just like, oh, well, it's over. Because, like, you look at how they played against the Tigers when the scoreboard was in their favor. They were electric. You look at how they played the first 20 minutes of this game against the Cowboys. They were electric. But then that 60 minutes after, after the Faitoa Mariner mistake, and then the 80 minutes against the Dolphins, they just played, you know, pathetic.
Yeah, and it continued here. I think Shane Flanagan, they had a fan day the day after the game. And that's what Flanagan said he's trying to change. And then you had Hunt put up that bomb. Lomax comes down with it, drops it, and then the Cowboys go up the other end and score. By that point, it's 34-18, and it's all over Red Rover. And exactly. Then you had Holmes, and that effort on Chad Townsend's try was absolutely fucking pathetic.
Yeah.
It has to be said, mate. That was so bad. He had three defenders on him, and he's still... This is Chad Townsend we're talking about. The bloke that we all call a handbrake, Dan's probably lobs grenades at for fun during the week at the gym. And he was able to carry Tom Eisenhuth, Ben Murdoch-Masilla, and Jack Bird over the line for a try.
How are you letting Chad Townsend look like prime Saquon Barkley? Like, seriously.
They've got one thing in common, those two, and it's called taking money off teams for underperforming. And then off the last play of the
game... I said Saquon Barkley, not Ezekiel Elliott.
I could have said Russell Wilson in response. See? Broncos country, let's ride. But then from there, obviously, the Dragons got a late one with Zach Lomax. No last try. Doesn't win. But 46-24 was our final score. Scotty Drinkwater, Reece Robson, and Griffin Neame were my 3-2-1s. I gave Robson my 3 votes, Drinkwater 2, and Griffin Neame 1. Because I thought the impact of the game really changed when Neame came onto the field. And considering whatever the hell they are doing with Jason Taumalolo and his minute rotation, it's just like he came off at the 21-minute mark. That's why I'm saying the game's quality changed at that point when Neen came on.
Yeah. It's weird because he played the one stint against the Dolphins in round one. He played the one stint against the Dragons in round three. But then he played two stints against the Knights in round two, which included going into the Golden Point. So what is the rotation? Is it just switching, alternating every game between 20 and 40 minutes? Because if that's the case, what's the point of picking him? Why don't you run him two games straight and then rest him for the third?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that'd be a better outcome.
You're not wrong, mate. Not wrong at all. But I thought that's the way it looked. Val Holmes was outstanding. I thought Lomax tried. Blake Laurie and DeBellin tried. It was also good to see Jesse Marschke making his NRL debut. Mm.
Very long awaited.
Former Rooster himself didn't make a run, but defensively very good. 42 tackles, only the two misses in his first stint, I thought, in his first game, rather. Bit surprised they started with him and left Molhuizen on the bench.
Hmm. Yeah, I was too, but I feel like that was designed to, I guess, be a bit more defensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, similar sort of in the way they start with Little in signing 17.
I just say that because Little at least takes a run at a dummy half. And I think Molhuizen has a lot of similar traits to what we have seen in the lower grades and in his brief stints in first grade.
I think Molhuizen's a bit too aggressive compared to Little, though, which is why he's better in the 14.
Fair shout, my friend, fair shout. Luciano Leilua against his old club, 9 runs, 104 metres. There were some good signs there, but the Dragons just faded away to obscurity. Fine Fuiaki, first game on the edge. He copped that head clash with Blake Laurie. Came back on, scored a good try. Looks a find on the edge with Jeremiah Nene, the other edge back rower. Sam McIntyre, I thought, did some good things off the bench as well. I'm really surprised to see Sam McIntyre keep coming along.
Mm. He's been a very good find for the Cowboys. But just doubling back to the Fine Fuiaki performance, I'll tell you what. The longer Helan Lukey's on the sideline for, the more the Dolphins are going to have to up their offer to get him to sign. To get Fine Fuiaki to sign with them, that's for sure.
Good shout, my friend. Moving on, Tigers 32, Sharks 6 at Leichhardt Oval. The second biggest shithole in rugby league besides wherever South Sydney play. Have you seen some of those shots of the hill, mate? Like, in some of those lines to go to the toilet? My God.
The eighth wonder of the world? Or like the eighth dirtiest place in the world? Jesus.
Like, it's good for a suburban ground vibe, but as a grinding rugby league venue, I don't know. I don't know about Leichhardt. There's some good things about it. It's a spiritual home, but it should be like Belmore in its periodic use.
Hmm.
But talking about the game, bit of a scrap one to start with until Tom Hazeldon charged across. They got it out to 6-0. Then they had a line break straight away with Katoa, but then nothing to eventuate it. And then the Tigers went to the air with Caesar. Fa'atape batted it back and we were locked at 6-all, and there was a bit more of a game on our hands, but Nico Hines had an absolute shocker in this game. He had a Barry Crocker, didn't he?
Yeah, it was one of the worst games we've seen Nico play in the Sharks jersey. And we said a little bit last year too.
But absolute bed shit for Nico. I thought you could say that for about half the Sharks players. I think the guys we can excuse, Talakai, Katoa, Mulatalo, Hazeldon, maybe Wilton as well, McInnes. That's about it.
Maybe Brayley too.
No, not Brayley. His defense was absolutely shocking.
Okay.
Like, you look at the defense for the 2 tries before halftime. Rushed up early, fell for the Coruscant pass to Safarth. And then for the one where Coruscant ducked out a dummy half and made a dart, he legitimately tackled his own player. Conceded a 6 again. There was nobody at marker, and Coruscant was able to run.
Okay, true. I get what you're saying.
Like, that was absolutely embarrassing. Like, if a Roosters player did that, I would be so pissed.
Yeah, true. I get what you're saying.
But for the Sharks, they were down to 16 players midway through the first half because I've never seen this happen before. Tom Hazleton injured his calf warming. Oh, sorry, Royce Hunt injured his calf in the warm-up, just warming up on the sideline. I've never seen that happen before.
Yes. Yeah, it's unique.
Only at Leichhardt.
Only at Leichhardt, seriously.
But Finucane and Rudolph didn't return either. The Sharks are worried about a big ankle injury for Toby, but the Tigers were just outstanding in the second half. Trudeau didn't put any energy to defuse a kick. Jareem the Dream put it down, and then they finished him off in the final 10 minutes with Buller's second try of the night. Nico did kick a 40-20, so he'll probably pluck a Dally M vote from somewhere. But a very dark day for the Sharks, but I think a lot of questions have to be pointed at Craig Fitzgibbon. I was listening to Dan and Terry on the Fins Up podcast last night. They put out a rant episode straight after the game. Jack Williams isn't an edge. If you're going to blow up the one decent thing that's worked for the Sharks this year, it has been Jack Williams coming off the bench, providing a bit of spark with Hazleton. Putting him on an edge, it takes away everything from that. You bring in Billy Burns, who's a bona fide edge player, and you're playing for half an hour off the bench. You blow up the whole rotation worse than when Nasser decided to blow up Challenger to stick Jack Williams on the edge. Like, what are you doing?
It seems very counterproductive, doesn't it?
I don't get it, mate.
I know hindsight's 20/20, but with the injury issues, it doesn't make sense to have Billy Burns on the bench at all for that game.
Yeah, it's a bizarre one. Like, I was surprised at the first change when the HIA happened with Rudolph that they didn't put Burns straight onto the edge and move Jack Williams into prop. I was really surprised they didn't do that because we all know Williams is a much better prop. He gets more carries out there. The Sharks don't use their edges productively, even more so now that Nicola is out suspended.
Hmm.
I just found it very, very counterproductive, as you said, mate. Very disappointing from the Sharks, that performance. But
it's weird how many coaches struggle with their rotations in the NRL at the moment because it's not just a Fitzgibbon issue. We talked about Brett Arthur last week against the Panthers, you know, and there's multiple other coaches in the league that just can't seem to manage their interchanges properly.
While that's happening, even Robbo is starting to make sense with his rotation. And we all know how much I whinged about that. Just let that sink in. Trent Robertson's making sense with rotations. Would you believe that?
No. Not at all.
But on the Tigers, they deserve their flowers. I am so impressed with what I'm seeing from Lachlan Galvin at 6. He's running, he's poising it around the side. It's so good to see from a kid in just his second first grade game.
Yeah, it 100% is. I feel like he has really just gone under the radar in his development in a way because like everyone knew he was going to be a good player. But no one was expecting him to be this good this early. And it's going to be interesting to see how he develops over the course of this season because with Luai coming in 2025, as we all know, obviously he's going to take that 5'8 jersey. So are they going to try to mold Galvin into sort of a 5'8 halfback hybrid this year? Or are they going to let him have a year of experience at 5'8"? Luai comes in and they go, right, we're dropping you down to reserve grade. You've taken everything you know from playing 5'8 at the NRL level. Use that while we also train you as a number 7 in New South Wales Cup so that halfway through the season or it perhaps 2026, you can come into the number 7 jersey at the NRL level as well.
I think they're already training him to be a 7 because you can see the times where he's commanding authority and taking control of the attack. I mentioned it before, but for a second gamer to have that level of trust and honesty in the attacking phase.
Especially next to a veteran halfback like Caesar. Like, he was doing it alongside Jaden Sullivan in round 2. But I think it's different doing it to Caesar, because Caesar's a guy who has a lot of respect. He's played, what, almost 200 NRL games at this point?
Yep.
So, definitely one of the more respected hops in the league. And to be just out calling him and calling the shots of the plays as an 18-year-old with two NRL games to your name is impressive.
Yeah, and I thought Appy Coruscant putting that faith in him as well, even better. And you had guys there like Clemmer, Pole, I thought was outstanding. Bateman, Alex Seyfarth works so much better coming off the bench. He was outstanding, provided a real point of difference. But the real underrated one for me, Samuel Afainiu.
Yes.
He's done so well.
He's been very impressive in these first two games. And went under the radar, I thought, in the match against the Raiders. But was a bit of a standout in this game.
Just 52 post-contact meters.
Very consistent in the middle of the park. And with the Tigers still trying to weigh up what their best option number 13 is, I wonder how long it's going to be before finally gets a shot.
Yeah. So looking ahead to the next couple of weeks for the Tigers, they play the... Just making sure, yeah. Eels, Dolphins, Dragons, and then Penrith in Bathurst before a home game against the Broncos at Campbelltown. But that's a very interesting next couple of weeks. I think they've got to fancy themselves in pretty much all of those games, is it? To be in the grind for 80 minutes.
Mm. That'll be the test. Like, what we saw against Canberra, we'll say that's the floor of where the Tigers are. What we saw against Cronulla, we'll say that's where the ceiling of where the Tigers are. Now they have to go out and prove that they can play in between those two. It's not just constant floor to ceiling to floor to ceiling to performances for them.
Yeah, 100% agree, my friend. Moving on, Eels 28, Manly 24. Manly got out to a very quick 14-0 lead. They exposed that new-look left edge for the Parramatta Eels. Blaise Talangi on debut. Morgan Harper got absolutely bathed in the opening 12 minutes of this one. And then you got to give it to Seibold for starting so strong so early, don't you?
Yeah, 100%. He obviously, Manly had somewhat fast starts in all three of the matches. I know South's got the better start in round one, but Manly were still in the fight through that first 20 minutes or so.
Definitely jumped us.
Definitely jumped the Roosters in that first 20 minutes, and this was definitely their first 20 of the season against Parra. Like, they looked completely in control.
Yeah, 100%.
Clearly they weren't.
Clearly they weren't. They dropped the ball, and then they basically made them pay. Ben Trbojevic put it down in the 16th minute. Will Panasini capitalised on some very ordinary kick defusals. They were able to go down the field again in the 25th minute. But Junior Paolo produced a absolute beautiful pass to Mitchell Moses, wasn't it?
Yeah, 100%. It was, mate, 10 out of 10, no notes.
14-12, and then they ended up getting the lead. Blaise Talangi ran over the top of Turbo. How often do we see that?
Not as often as it needs to be.
Especially for a first gamer.
He was excellent. And I think it's pretty clear the Titans have, the Eels have a long-term talent at their disposal.
Yeah, 10 runs, 32 post-contact meters. Generally more of his, he's been playing a bit more fullback in the New South Wales Cup, but very, very good product. But Manly had the last laugh going into the break. Ruben Garrick finishing off, getting some redemption down that side of the park. It did look like it came off a knock-on. What do we think about that one?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's a disappointing call, I guess. But
then you see who's in the middle and then you're not shocked.
100%.
Peter Goff. Excuse me. But the second half started and Morgan Harper got some redemption. That was a peach of a pass from Dylan Brown to Harper. Back got it to 20-18. And then Kelma Tuolungi hit a short ball off Mitchell Moses. That was absolutely beautiful to get it to 26-18, wasn't it?
Yes, it was beautiful ball. Oh, my.
But then the drama came. Obstruction in the 64th minute for Gerbo. This has created a lot of debate, this obstruction call. But for mine, he stops in the line. I don't know what you want to make of Luca Moretti's effort in defence, but he stops in the line. Turbo goes through set gap where Moretti could have gotten to, regardless of whatever effort he put in. He still could have gotten to that spot to at least make a effort on Turbo, whether it was a decent one or not. That's not up for us to determine. But and then it was a forward pass to Cole to score, but they obviously took it off the board. What did you think of my explanation?
I think you're 100% right. You know, at the end of the day, Moretti wasn't trying to make a tackle, but he doesn't have to be trying to make a tackle. The onus was on Gerbo to not stop in the defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like as much as you can bag Moretti for his effort, Gerbo is the one that should be criticised because it's just a dumb mistake that didn't have to be made.
Just get through the line. Don't stop. Just get through. And then Moses went over for a penalty goal. Corey Waddell went over for a late try to get it to 28-24. Manly had a couple late chances. And then Josh Allier got simmed in for being Josh Allier.
You don't need to talk about that.
Real low cow material there, Josh. But let's just go through a couple of players quickly. I touched on a couple of Manly players. I thought the impact of Junior Paolo today can't be understated. Complete turn of momentum, similar to what we're talking about with Griffin Neame and that change of tide in the Cowboys game. I thought there was some really good stuff there with Junior. Also, Reg in his 200th, I thought had some good moments. For Manly, their forwards didn't get over 100 metres. None of them did, mate.
Don't know what to say.
It's all about KPI, isn't it?
Even for a Seabold coach team, that's beyond awful.
Yeah. Anthony Seabold says that he thinks the management of the game changed after getting up 14-0. That's a fine. Not the fact that you choked a 14-0 lead.
Yeah. Look. Seabold loves choking a 14-0 lead. So that's the least surprising thing of today.
Yeah. Moving on, though. Newcastle 14, Melbourne 12. This game just felt like an absolute bludger to sit through. There was mistakes, penalties, half chances. Remus Smith went off injured after 20 minutes. Dane Gagai took advantage of Kane Bradley out on that side of the field for the first try. And then they quickly got a second KP's pass to Chiwala. That was something special, wasn't it?
Yes. My word. He's had a couple bad games, but he bounced back in a big way in this one, didn't he?
Yeah, peak arousal stuff, let me tell you. Getting it to 12-0.
100%.
Took a penalty goal to go up 14-0. The Knights really worked hard in the second half to come back. They forced an error off the kick and got it to 14-6. And then Tyron Wishart, he took an opportunity. He saw the line getting out to 14-12. Pappy missing the two-point field goal, but KP a star. I thought Chiwala really worked hard out of yardage, but I thought Kai Pierce-Paul had his welcome to first grade style game today.
Yes, he did. He was both parts impressive and disappointing, in my opinion.
Okay.
Like, he had some good moments, don't get me wrong.
Had some errors, though.
Exactly.
Had some big errors in a couple of key moments. But I like it. I like the 65 saving my super coach team from avoiding a third straight week of less than a ton. But I was really impressed with Jacob Seifert and Leo Thompson. They did some good things in yardage, but I thought they lacked a little bit from Matt Croker. Like, we saw his stats in Cup last week. They were off the charts outstanding. But against that Melbourne forward pack, he just kind of struggled to get going, respectfully.
Yeah, no, I get exactly what you're saying. He was all right again, but not as impressive as maybe you would have been expecting.
Yeah. Gamble and Cogger, quickly. What do we think?
Well, I mean, we both said it should be Hastings and Cogger in the halves. Look, I'm not a fan of giving Gamble an increased kicking duty, but it seemed like he was pretty okay with kicking in this one. Yeah. So it's odd, but I think it worked in a way. Although I still think you probably need 3 games to really think Callum is going to be, but by all accounts, Jackson Hastings dominated in the New South Wales Cup as well. So just even more food for thought from Adam O'Brien.
Yeah, 100% correct there, my friend. For the Storm, Trent Loiero had a bit of a game you'd want to forget after what was a good start to the year. Holy shit, he ran for over 200 metres.
Yes.
But again, a couple of poor defensive reads. He made a couple errors, conceded penalties. So, again, kind of what you were saying with Kai Pearce-Paul. You can kind of say the same for Trent Loiero.
Yeah, exactly.
Harry Grant, 56 tackles today. My word.
He just keeps getting better.
And he played 80.
Well, sort of had to.
Oh, of course, of course. Sean Blaw's first game as a Melbourne Storm. A lot of people, particularly Guru and a couple others, were pretty big on him. What do you think?
I mean, I thought he was all right.
As far as a comparison with Jared Sheehan is concerned, where do we think he sits moving forward? That's going to be the big dilemma after the bye week.
I would still go with Chan, personally.
So would I.
Just because what we've seen those first 2 games, I'd say Chan on the balance of, you know, what we have seen versus what we might see.
Yeah. Nothing at all to do with the fact that I need Chan to play one more game for a price rise.
No. Not at all. We're not that selfish.
Okay. Looking at the ladder at the completion of round 3, the Cowboys on top on 6 points. Then it's the Roosters in second. End the season now, please. Then it's Canberra, Penrith, Manly, Parramatta, the Dolphins, and the Storm rounding out the 8. Then it is the Tigers in 9th. Traditions, boys.
Traditions.
Tigers, Sharks also on 4 points. Then it's the Wires, Dogs, Knights, Broncos, Dragons, Titans on 2 points. And South Sydney is at the bottom of the ladder. First time since round 2, 2010.
Hey, I mean, not going to complain.
Not going to complain, but next week's matches, quickly, we've got the Roosters and Penrith on Thursday night in a blockbuster at Allianz. Good Friday's matches, Souths, Canterbury, Brisbane, North Queensland. Land on Friday. Saturday, it is the Dragons and Manly, followed by the Dolphins and Titans from the Gold Coast. Sunday's matches, Wires, Knights, Sharks, Raiders. And then Easter Monday, it is the Eels against the Tigers. Some big matches next week.
Yes. I can't wait. It's going to be a really good week. Easter's always such a fun week.
Always an upset or two, too.
I just wish... You know what I wish?
What?
That we could have Easter combining with Heritage Round. Sort of like what the Broncos are doing with the Diamond Throwback, but like make it for every team.
I like it, mate. I like it a lot. Challenge Cup action from the UK, round 6. So this is the quarter. This is the last 16 wins for all the Super League teams. So you had Hull, KR, St Helens, Wigan, Huddersfield, Lee, Castleford, and Warrington advancing through. Halifax play Catalans tomorrow morning. The game would have already been played by the time this episode's come out. So we're just going to assume for all shits and gigs that my Catalan Dragons make it through.
Yeah, I was wondering why you're going to say Catalans advance. Couldn't have been biased or anything.
Nothing at all biased, and I'm a Catalan Dragons supporter. But if we don't win, Steve McNamara should get sacked immediately. Losing to Halifax is a war crime. Okay. On to lower grade report. We're going to kick off in New South Wales. Actually, you know what? I'm going to kick off in Queensland because you guys don't play next week because of Easter.
Yes, very true, because Queensland is a traditional state with morals.
Talk us through round three, mate.
All right, so round three began with the PNG Hunters taking the win over the Sunshine Coast Falcons. For the Hunters, the try scorers were Brandon Nima, Clint Lama, Valentin Richard, and Robert Matthias. While for the Falcons, the try scorers were Kane Jackson and Talon Peters. Unfortunately, stats haven't been put in for this one. Moving on to the Pride, coming up with an 18-10 win over the Blackhawks in the Battle of the Old Queensland, North Queensland Derby. Unfortunately, the Blackhawks are no longer North Queensland affiliated, so they have a disadvantage in this one, and the Pride took advantage of it. Seamus King-Smith scored a double with Evan Child scoring the other try for the Pride, while for the Blackhawks, their tries were scored by Dudley Detoy and Bernard Lewis. In terms of Cowboys-affiliated players for the Pride, Jake Clifford had himself a decent game, one tackle break, two line break assists. Defensively was very poor with six missed tackles and also had two errors. Thomas Duffy at the halfback position, you know, didn't have as much of the ball as Clifford in terms of the attack, but he was better defensively and also the dominant kicker and also only made the one error. So moving on to our next game, we have the North Devils crushing the South Logan Magpies 32-8. The Devils' tries were scored, if you can allow me for a second, a double for Manasi Kaho and then tries to Jacob Gagan, Oren Keeley, Jeremiah Simbikin, and Campbell Duffy. Well, for the Magpies, their try was scored by Raiden Robinson. So for the Devils, in terms of Dolphins affiliated players, Tessie New had himself a solid game, 167 meters, 73 post contact, a tackle break, and a line break assist. Defensively, three tackles made, two tackles missed, so it could have been a bit better. Oren Keeley had himself a try, as I mentioned. 13 carries for 139 meters, 63 post contact, three tackle breaks, a line break, and two offloads. Defensively solid. Jeremiah Simbikin also had that try, as I mentioned. 14 carries, 179 meters, 64 post contact, 26 tackles, only the one miss, but did have three errors. Mason Teague coming off the bench, 9 carries for 73 meters, 26 tackles, one miss, and one error. So, decent game for them. For the Broncos playing for the Magpies, Jordan Pereira was at fullback. He had 12 carries for 136 meters and three tackle breaks as well as an offload. Ethan Kai Ward was playing at center. He had 120 meters off 16 carries as well as two tackle breaks. Joseph Tamane was playing in the other centers. He had 106 meters and two tackle breaks as well. Defensively, Tamane did a lot more work than Kai Ward. Blake Moser playing at dummy half had 5 carries for 42 metres. He had a tackle break. Defensively, very sound, 30 tackles, only the one miss, only the one error. Ben Tekura playing prop, 13 carries, 135 metres, 61 post contact, 4 tackle breaks, 16 tackles, 2 misses, 3 errors, however, for him. Rory Ferguson playing at lock was the last rugby affiliate player in this one. 9 carries, 75 metres, a tackle break, 33 tackles, only the one miss and no errors, so a very strong game for him. Moving on, the Burley Bears defeated the Tweed Seagulls 38-12. No stats for this one, but I can tell you the try scorers for the Bears. They were Troy Leo, Nicholas O'Mealy, Kea Pere, Josh Rogers, Charlie Murray, Joshua Paston and Hayden Schwoss. While for the Seagulls, their tries were scored by Braden McGrady and Lyndon McGrady. Also worth noting, Jaden Campbell made his return to rugby league in this one, playing 40 minutes for the Seagulls as he comes back from that knee injury. Moving on, the Mackay Cutters defeated the Capras 26 points to 14. For the Cutters, their tries were scored by Viliami Bailea, Mahe Fanua, Josh Smith, Sean Mullaney, Jamal Shimasaki, and yes, that was the Mahe Fanua. For the Capras, their tries were scored by Connor Rothery and Lachlan Hubner. In terms of Cowboys, affiliated players for the Cutters, Semi Valame had 13 carries for 146 metres, 67 post-contact, a tackle bust, and three errors, which is impressive for a winger. Viliami Valea at centre had the try, as I mentioned, 11 carries for 133 metres, four tackle breaks, a line break, two offloads, two missed tackles, and two made tackles. So could have done better in defence at least. That is it in terms of the Cutters. In terms of the Dolphins players with the Capras, there were none. So we can move straight on to the Tigers shutting out the Jets 24 points to nil. So the celebrations of the Jets' first win in ages last week has been shut down pretty quickly. They've been brought back to earth by the Tigers. Marion Seve got himself a double with tries also scored by Trey Stewart, Rico Falanico, pardon me, and Levi Hapulu. Well, for the Jets, obviously they didn't score any tries. So for the Storm-affiliated players with the... Well, actually, no stats aren't in for this one, so I can't even do that. yeah, thank you very much to Stats Perform for screwing us over with these. Anyway, moving on to the win in Manly Seagulls, picking up a 22-12 win over the Redcliffe Dolphins. For the Seagulls, their try scorers were Matthew Wilson, Sione Hapuate, Connor Broadhurst, and Cooper Page-Wilson. For the Dolphins, their try scorers were Valens Tavare and Harrison Graham. Touch on their stats in a second. But in terms of Broncos affiliated players with the Seagulls, Deluise Hoyter had 13 carries for 98 metres, 4 tackle breaks, 12 tackles, 0 misses, and 2 errors. Jaden Hunt, who I touched on earlier, could come onto the team. Didn't have a performance to reflect that, unfortunately. 6 carries for 47 metres, 18 post contact, 1 tackle bust, 13 tackles for no misses, and the 1 error. Corey Pace, playing at hooker, had the 4 carries for 32 metres. He had a tackle bust, and he had a line break assist. 44 tackles, 4 misses, no errors, so very strong game for him. And meanwhile, for the Dolphins, you had Trey Fuller at fullback, 18 carries for 146 metres, 5 tackle breaks, a line break, 2 offloads. Very strong game. Valens Tavare, 9 carries, 86 metres, 2 tackle breaks, 9 tackles, 1 miss, and no errors. Could have been better, could have been worse. Sean O'Sullivan at halfback, 18 carries for 87 metres. Kicking game was all right, although Joshua James was the predominant kicker. He also had 2 errors, which wasn't very pretty. Harrison Graham, as I touched on, had that try. He also had 5 carries for 16 metres, 2 tackle breaks, a line break, and obviously 40 tackles for 2 misses. And that will be it. So that's all the Dolphins players done, and that's our Host Plus Cup wrap-up.
Thanks very much, mate. Moving on to the knock-on effect New South Wales Cup. Souths 28, Roosters 12. Tries to Isaac Thompson, Richie Kennard, Jai Gray, Jacob Gagai, Matt French. For the Roosters, Ethan Clark, Wood and Benaiah Iolu with tries. For the Roosters, Tyler Moriarty, 53 tackles out of dummy half. Junior Pauga, 174 metres on the wing. Siwa Wong, 93 metres. He played 80 minutes. Egan Butcher, 138 metres. Defensively, both for Egan, 7 misses, so that's a little bit concerning. Siwa Wong made 41 tackles, 4 misses. Billy Smith, in his return game, only played the first half, 61 metres, 22 post-contact metres, 3 tackle breaks, 4 made tackles, 3 missed tackles. So I think he might have a bit more time with the Chooks at Wentworth Park, mate.
Yeah, of course.
Jai Gray, this is the young kid with so much raps on him. Just listen to this stat line, mate. 271 metres, 72 post-contact, 4 line breaks, a line break assist, a try assist, 9 tackle breaks.
Impressive.
And a forced dropout as well. He might see himself shaking hands with Demetrio this week. Lockie Ilias, a try assist and a line break assist here on Tiapia. 2 line break assists, 2 try assists as well. Shaq Mitchell, impressive for the middle third. Yes, Penrith 34, Canterbury 10. Trent Tolauer double, other tries to Peach. David Fale, Luke Summerton, Dane Laurie for the Dogs. Harry Hayes and Bailey Biondiotto. Preston Ricky Simbin for a hip drop. Jake Turpin made 44 tackles. Most in the game, Reece?
No comment.
Bronson Cherry, just under 120 metres, though, defensively needs a little bit of work. Chetavano was average in the middle. Carl Tonga, impressive on the edge, but I want to take you to this forward, Lipoi Hopoi. 221 metres in 68 minutes, 109 post-contact metres, mate. Very good signs for Canterbury there. Meanwhile, Ilongi, Alamotti, Ricky, Jordan Grant, even Mav Guy had himself a pretty decent performance, so some good signs there. Dane Laurie, 2 line break assists and a try assist. Canberra 42, Warriors 4, tries to Princeton, Ezra, Chevy Stewart, Manaya Waitieri, Zach Wolford, Adrian Trevelyan, Mitch Henderson and Trey Mooney. For the Warriors, just a low try to Ed Cossey. Notable this one, Reece, Corey Horsburgh returned. Got through 65 minutes, 151 metres, 64 post-contact, 34 tackles.
Yeah, that's... could be better.
Could be better, could be worse. Got through a mountain of work, though, but interesting that he had to make his way back through Cup. Chevy Stewart at the back, 150 metres, a line break assist, a try assist on top of his try. Trey Mooney, 17 carries, 197 metres, 99 post-contact metres.
Impressive.
Defensively, impressive. Made 28 tackles for 2 misses. If I'm an NRL club, I'm offering him some coin.
Yeah, 100%. I would be too.
Adam Pompey and Ali Leotarda, they're probably dueling for a centre spot. Pompey, 8 for 74. Leotarda, 7 for 76. Defensively, they're just as bad as each other. 3 and 4 misses, respectively. Ed Cossey had 150 metres. He might sneak himself an outside chance at centre.
Yeah, wouldn't be surprised, to be honest.
Yeah, neither would I.
Playing really well.
Really well indeed. Now, these next 3 games don't have stats. So, Blacktown 40, Parramatta 20. These games were played today. A hat-trick for Lots, Watson, Halita. Other tries, Josh Schuster, Jake Arthur, Lee Hopewadi, and Clayton Farlalo. For the Eels, Dean Kia, Dejan Arce, Jake Tago, and Brendan Handscrossing. Newtown 25, West 24. For the Jets, Sam Stonestreet, Chris Slater, Raptus, Sam Healy, and St. Dominic's College legend himself, Liam Eisen, with tries. Purdue, 4 goals and a field goal in the last 30 seconds of play. For the Magpies, Latu Fainu, Justin Matamua, James Valvatu, Alex Lobb, a lob kicking 4 goals. Brett Naden, Simbin in his first game back from injury.
Where else would he be?
There was an ugly head clash. Jake Simkin had to be taken off the field early in the second half. He and Asu Kapoa collided heads. Kapoa did pass his HIA and played. Latu Fainu got through about 40 minutes and from all reports was very impressive.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Kayla Leroy also played reserve grade this week.
Wow. Didn't expect to see that.
And then finally, Newcastle 50, Bears 24 for the Knights. Doubles to Armstrong, Price, McCarthy, Modandreke, Fletcher Myers with 1 try. For the Bears, Alan Fitzgibbon picked up a hat-trick, and our boy Keegan Russell-Smith crossed for a try.
Not bad. Love that.
Also, Nelson Asofa-Solomona got through about 50 minutes for the Bears today in his return from injury.
Yeah, good on him.
Suafar Longo picked up an ankle injury in New Zealand last week. That's why he did not play.
Aye, aye, aye.
Yep, Sally was not happy about Sula's decision to go to New Zealand last week because of a fear of injury, but it's rugby league, it happens.
Look, I'll tell you what, though, it is starting to become a bit worrying about him with injuries he's copping.
It is very worrying. I tend to agree there, my friend, but it is time for this week's LOL Cow of the Week. Reese, what do you have for us?
Well, my LOL Cow of the Week is Lewis Hamilton fans. Because in today's Australian Grand Prix, on lap 3, Max Verstappen retired due to a brake failure. And of course, the loudest fans celebrating it were Lewis Hamilton fans, because they hate Max Verstappen for obvious 2021-related reasons.
But
anyway, just a few laps later, I think it was about on lap 18, Lewis Hamilton retired due to an engine failure. And all the words they said laughing at Max came back to bite them on the ass. But it was just that was a crazy race in Australia. First of all, shout out to Carlos Sainz. Always seems to win those kinds of races when Max Verstappen has issues. Then, God, that crash for George Russell in the last lap. Did you see it?
Yeah, I was watching it in between the NRL game. It was very scary.
Stuck in the middle of the road as the cars were flying past. I can't imagine being a driver in that situation. That would be awful.
Felt like one of those incidents at Bathurst in like 2008 when the car was like parked on the side of the road but just got crashed straight in the back of it. I was scared something like that was going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. So lucky that they brought out that virtual safety car early enough that no one hit it. But also shout out, obviously, Oscar Piastri. Australia represents fourth place, so close to being the first Aussie to ever get a podium in the Australian Grand Prix.
Yeah, so, Ricardo rocked in 2014.
Yes, exactly. Never forget what that fuel flow did to us.
But for mine, I'm going to go James Hooper.
Oh, yes.
For trying to be one of the boys at Leichhardt Oval on the Hill on Saturday. He was igniting a Tigers chant. He was absolutely fanboying it on the hill at Leichhardt, and it was cringe at its absolute best.
Do they listen to themselves, these cars?
They must be. They must be listening, let me tell you. But on to Supercoach this week. Our top scorer in our league scene group is Big 12's X Adam, 1189 in a very hotly contested week of Supercoach. I finished up with 1025 this week.
Not bad. I finished up with 1102.
So tied with Aiden Edgecombe.
Tied with Aiden Edgecombe, yes.
Last week's top scorer.
At least a few hours before Phoenix Crossland inevitably loses points and I turn it around and win.
I'm expecting some updates for my games today. Like guys like Ponga, Lane, Burbo, Turbo, Dylan Brown, maybe Joey Lusick sneaks a couple points, but I'm just hoping for an update because I'm 8 points behind Haley at the moment.
I've still got Papp and Hopgood that can get updates, so
yeah,
nothing too major there.
Yeah, 100%, my friend. Any changes, trades for you next week?
Yes, there will definitely be trades.
With the price rises?
Yes, I'll try and catch some price rises, try and get rid of a couple of guys who are going to drop in price. I'm not exactly sure what my game plan is going to be. I'll probably have a better idea of what it's going to be when I actually get to see what the projected price rises and drops are going to be from round 4. Certainly, I think one of the players that I will be looking to move on from is one of the two halfbacks in Nathan Cleary and Nico Hines. I think it's leaning towards Nico Hines at the moment, trying to see if I can reinvest into some of the other positions in the team to strengthen those and still pick up a halfback that can get consistent points. Because right now, Hines, the money just doesn't match up to the points output.
Yeah, I'm going to give Nico another week or two. I just want to see if he doesn't deliver after the Canberra game, I'm probably going to make a move. But I'm going to give him one more chance. Tua Picky's definitely moving on because of the failed HIA.
If you have Tua Picky, trade him. I'd say after this week as well, Hosking would be on the trade list, although you might want to give him another week because his break even will be that low.
I want your thoughts on this. So I'm going to go Tua Picky to Galvin.
And then move Strange to centre wing, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's perfect.
That's what I'm going to do there. I need Zach Labor to play one more game so I can get a price rise out of him. And then from there, I'm gonna keep Liam Henry because he's going to be in for a couple monster weeks after that 55 with that price rise. I'm going to keep him. Otherwise, the rest of the squad I'm happy with. Like, I'm really happy with guys like Sean Lane, Josh Curran, Morgan Smithies. They're making me coin. Pierre Cora is not going to lose as much coin as before. But a couple of the guys, like the top-ish guys bombing out is a bit of a worry. And also, Jamin Salmonen is on his very last chance.
Mm. Yes.
I went with him over Hutch. I may be starting to regret it, but I'm getting at least one price rise out of Jamin Salmon, which is positive. How much is he worth against? So Jamin Salmon's worth 317K. I'll probably get him to about 330. Oh, sorry, about... Hang on a moment. I need to have a look at this again. I'll probably get him to about 340K at best. I'll take that.
Yeah. That's entirely fair.
But, mate, that's where we will leave us. We will be going, of course, we'll be out on Tuesday next week because of the Easter Monday game. But again, from all of us, have a spectacular long weekend. You get a five-day weekend, which is absolutely amazing. You could even snag Thursday, and then you could get Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So make the most of your days off.
Go enjoy yourself. Spend time with family. Go down, do some outdoor stuff, whatever you do for Easter, go make it yours and go enjoy it.
And smash the chockey.
Oh, 100% smash the chockey.
Reece, thanks very much for joining us. We'll see you after Easter Monday.
Thanks for having me, AJ. Have a good one, everyone.
See you guys.
All right, not bad.